John Fitzgerald Kennedy is largely credited with transforming the way American politics is perceived and practiced. Although Eisenhower had allowed his presidential press conferences to be filmed, it was JFK who asked for them to be broadcast live. He was closely tied to popular culture and knew how to use the media to his advantage. And still, 49 years after his assassination, his images evoke a strong reaction in the American voters. JFK moved into the White House with a glamorous wife and young family, not too dissimilar to the current occupant of one of the world's most famous houses, Barack Obama. I am with Greg Frame, a PhD student from the University of Warwick's Film and Television Studies Department, to discuss why JFK's image still evokes such a strong response in the American public and how Obama used that to his advantage. Hi, Greg. We are recording this podcast on May the 29th, which was JFK's birthday. So to kick us off, could you please briefly explain your research?
During the election campaign in 2008, I was struck in the mainstream press by the number of times the Kennedy comparison was used in relation to Obama. And as I dug a little deeper, I realised that in political terms, the comparisons are largely superficial. But on the level of image and presentation, I think that the similarity is overwhelming. So you've got, they're both very young, they're both senators when they were elected to the White House, and both had very young families and children. But what I also realised is that when it comes to Kennedy, I think there's a desire to believe that he's going to be reborn in some way. Because I think when he was assassinated, there was this feeling that potential had been lost, like there was something that could have been fulfilled that wasn't. And in 2008, it seemed as though Obama could be the person to fulfill that promise. And it was immediately apparent that I think it was a psychological yearning rather than anything that was really particularly rational. Kennedy's death kind of allowed him to transcend his status as a politician, so he became almost religious in some way. And it's almost sort of Freudian in scope, I think, that Kennedy's like mythologization has positioned him as an ideal sort of father figure in relation to American presidents. And so although there are many contradictions in his personal biography, I think he's been memorialized in popular culture as the kind of image ideal of a president. So what I decided to do is I wanted to compare images of the two men. So I looked at Kennedy's representation in documentaries. The two main examples are Robert Drew's Cinema Verite documentaries, Primary and Crisis, which kind of glamorized Kennedy's image in a lot of ways, one on the campaign trail, one while he was in the White House. And then also looking at the many, many photographs of him that were taken for things like Life magazine. And then I placed these images alongside Obama, because he's obviously his visual image is you know, ubiquitous, and taken from documentaries. Also the many photographs that were taken by Annie Leibovitz for Vanity Fair magazine. And also the images that he used himself in his publicity material. And I was struck by how Obama actually explicitly channeled Kennedy in some of the images that he used when he was elected to the White House. And in many cases, he actually was explicitly invoking Kennedy and Kennedy's memory. And I think that the desire to believe the comparison was probably very obvious.
So why do you think the idea of a public image was so important to JFK?
Well, I think his father, Joe, who'd worked in Hollywood, knew that the image was all important when John F. Kennedy was first a political candidate. So he knew that what Kennedy looked like was going to be very important. And then also, I think he was the first to kind of fully grasp the changing dynamics of politics in a television age. So while it was clear that the medium was going to prove to be important, I think Kennedy really kind of grasped the nettle in that case. And I think that's probably why he's become understood as the first television president. I think it's become a bit of a truism, actually, in lots of ways, to say that television actually kind of won Kennedy the presidency, because his race with Richard Nixon in 1960 was very, very close. It was only decided by a few thousand votes. And a lot of people say, it might just be a sort of apocryphal tale, but his performance in the first televised debate really kind of secured him the victory, because he looked so much better than Richard Nixon. And there were lots of ways in which Kennedy knew how important TV would be, where Nixon really didn't. So Kennedy was not ashamed to wear makeup to look better on TV, whereas Nixon refused makeup. He'd also had flu before the televised debate, so he looked a little bit clammy and unwell. And he also bashed his knee against a car door when he was arriving at the debate. So he looked kind of unwell old, whereas Kennedy looked young, vigorous, and bronzed, like really, really healthy. So I think that that contrast really secured him the win in a lot of ways. And the irony of that, of course, as well, is that Nixon's only 4 years older than Kennedy, and but he looked like eons older in a lot of ways. And also, I think image management was really important to Kennedy, because actually the differences between his political standpoints, the comparison between him and the Republican Party, weren't actually that great. So he was able to kind of project a perfect image that kind of differentiated him in some way from the Republican Party at the time. So he offered an image of youth and health and vitality. And he represented, as he said in his inaugural address, a new generation of Americans, despite, of course, being very similar in age to Nixon. So it kind of enabled him to mark himself out as a part from the Republican establishment. And also, I think the image was very important to him because he suffered from numerous health problems as well. And in many ways, he was the opposite of his construction, because he had a chronic back complaint, which meant he had to often wear a girdle. And this was kind of hardly the sort of image of strength that America demanded of their president at the height of the confrontation with the Soviet Union. So it was got careful sort of image management that helped him sidestep these problems and projected this perfect image.
Clearly, JFK is still held in high regard by the American population. Is this purely down to his public image that he created for himself? Or was he as good a politician and president as his reputation?
I think it's a bit of both, really. Because what I've found from my research is that if you took him solely on his political achievements, the continued adoration of Kennedy would be irrational. I mean, he achieved some things, but really he only was in office for just over 1,000 days before he died. He sort of laid the groundwork in a lot of ways for some of the things that would be achieved later. Also, during his administration, he, of course, averted war, nuclear war with the Soviet Union, which has become mythologized. The Cuban Missile Crisis is probably the most important thing that happened during his presidency. And he also set America on course towards civil rights legislation and, of course, the moon landing in 1969. But I think, you know, the 1960s were a scary time in America, particularly, you know, I mean, for the duration of the decade, it was a very turbulent period. And the threat of nuclear war was obviously one of the big factors in this. I mean, you only have to look at Hollywood's representations of the presidency in the period to show that actually there was a significant doubt at the time about the ability of the presidency to prevent disaster. So films such as Failsafe and Dr. Strangelove, obviously from opposite ends of the spectrum, one's a very, very serious drama, the other one's a comedy. They sort of dramatise the possibility of nuclear war. And both presidents, one played by Henry Fonda, the other by Peter Sellers, are largely powerless to prevent it. And also, Kennedy's presidency was actually characterised by caution. I mean, he's been maybe mythologised as a sort of radical liberal in some circles, positively for liberals and negatively for conservatives. But he actually, he was very much allied to the status quo. I mean, you know, the continued dominance of the military establishment and corporations and were left unchanged by him. And he made quite a few mistakes. So his decision to allow the invasion of the Bay of Pigs by Cuban revolutionaries was a disaster. And his covert attempts to assassinate Fidel Castro provoked the Soviet Union, really, into the standoff over Cuba. So he must take some responsibility for the eventual almost conflict in that area. And also, there's been lots of revelations, some true, some not, about his moral stature, and he is rumoured to have had numerous affairs while president. And that kind of undermined his reputation in the years following his death, although it hasn't impacted particularly upon the public's regard for him. In many ways, the esteem with which he is still regarded is largely to do with his wife, Jackie, and her intervention following his death. And she kind of established this myth of Camelot, the idea that the period in which Kennedy was president was sort of a mythical medieval tale of a glamorous king, you know, ruling over this sort of benign kingdom. And in many ways, that's become the image that people remember of Kennedy. And I think Jackie was pretty astute in this regard, because she knew that if he'd been left to historians, he might not be remembered in quite the same way. So instead of using the language of history, she used language that is associated with movies, literature, that kind of thing. So not necessarily historical fact, but a mythological discourse that really, really has solidified the image of greatness in the public memory. Kennedy kind of comes in the sort of middle in terms of the lists of American presidents and where they're ranked. He's not regarded in the same way as Lincoln or Washington or Franklin Roosevelt, but he's certainly not the disaster that Richard Nixon or George W. Bush are perceived to have been, although Nixon's been slightly reevaluated. So he sort of comes right bang in the middle. But in terms of public regard, he's up there with the best of them. I think Kennedy's meaning for us is probably more important in a mythological sense than a historical one. You only have to look at representations of him in films and television to see this. Oliver Stone's JFK kind of spins a mythological narrative of what would have happened if Kennedy had lived. America would have avoided Vietnam, according to Oliver Stone. And Stone's work over a couple of decades has demonstrated that Vietnam is the site, the primary site of America's fall from grace. And the suggestion in JFK is that if JFK had lived, it would have been fine. But also there have been numerous miniseries and feature films that construct Kennedy as this kind of all-American hero. And they rarely engage with any accusations that he abused political power or was guilty of kind of all the affairs that he's been accused of and things like that. So you look at a film like 13 Days, which is about the Cuban Missile Crisis, and it kind of entirely disregards any suggestion that Kennedy might have been responsible for the escalation. And it just completely shows him as the hero who prevented nuclear confrontation. The only drama in recent times that has even, you know, tried to undermine the image, which was the recent History Channel produced The Kennedys. Before it was even produced, when it was still in the scripting stage, it was attacked by the gatekeepers of Kennedy's memory as this kind of horrible, slanderous piece of work that was clearly a kind of right-wing hatchet job. They were forced to climb down from a lot of the things that they were claiming in the drama. So it becomes this really sort of tepid investigation of maybe the darker side of the Kennedy image, and it really does pull its punches. So it kind of, in many ways, it just keep in keeping with the mythologization of him. And actually, what I think that the furore surrounding the Kennedys seemed to suggest to me was that I don't think people are really ready to let go of that myth just yet. As you can see from the comparisons with Obama and Kennedy, people still want to believe in it. And I think it also comes down to things like the serious national self-doubt surrounding the American dream in the recession and all that kind of stuff, that actually they still want to hold on to their American heroes. And I think it's going to prove to be quite a persistent construction from here until whenever.
Do you think Obama went into the 2008 campaign with a clear strategy of trying to evoke those JFK memories and link those thoughts to himself?
I think election campaigns are always governed in some way by nostalgia for previous presidents and previous figures of high regard within American politics and society. And I think certainly Obama would have looked to capitalize on any kind of residual goodwill towards JFK. But I think Obama looked to make more kind of conscious associations with Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King. These are certainly the men that he mentions in his books, in his autobiography, and in The Audacity of Hope as well. I think actually the insistence on the comparison with JFK, which came through in the media, says more about the public's desire to see a new Kennedy than anything Obama really did explicitly, at least before he was elected. And it seems that everyone is still looking for the new Kennedy, the next Kennedy, but they aren't really looking for the man, they're looking for the image and what the image represents. And to many people, the image of Kennedy represents a time of stability and tranquility before the disasters that followed. All politicians want to suggest they're going to deliver good times, prosperity, security. And whether it's strictly true or not, the time over which Kennedy presided does kind of represent those elusive qualities to a lot of people. And so when Obama becomes president at a time of real uncertainty economically, he probably felt it was in his best interests to at least partially associate himself with that period and trying to return the country to a kind of mythologized stability or stable past in some way. But I think the more explicit association with Kennedy really only emerges after his election. There are three photographs in particular that I've found in my research that really do sort of cultivate this comparison. There's one of Obama's daughter playing in the Oval Office while he's working, which explicitly recalls Stanley Tretik's famous photo of John Jr. underneath his father's desk in the Oval Office. And then there's another one which even further reinforces this idea that Obama is the kind of progeny of Kennedy in some way, where he himself leaps under the desk when Kennedy's daughter Caroline comes to visit him. So he in some ways he's definitely trying to position himself as the kind of inheritor of this mantle, as the kind of son to Kennedy's father in some way. And then I think one of the most wonderful photographs is of him looking up at Kennedy's portrait. So in some way, like looking to for guidance from a great man. And the wonderful thing about Kennedy's portrait is that, unlike many portraits of presidents that hang in the White House, Kennedy's one kind of looks unfinished in some way, because obviously most presidents only have their portrait painted as they're ending their term or coming to the end of their administration. Obviously Kennedy died suddenly, so the portrait had to be kind of commissioned posthumously. So it has this kind of impressionistic quality that makes it look like it needs to be completed in some way. And also Kennedy's stance in that, he's got his arms folded and his head down, very famous, that's iconic in terms of the way he carried himself, but also it suggests a kind of mournful quality. So this kind of unfinished mournful quality of the picture suggests that someone needs to come along and complete it. And I think that the photo of Obama looking up at it suggests maybe that he will complete the picture.
And finally, do you think that Obama's public image, as strong as it is now, do you think it will still be as strong in 50 years' time in the same kind of legacy that JFK's image has?
I don't, but I don't think that's anything deficient in Obama, nor is it anything really to do with Kennedy, and I think it goes beyond mere individuals in some ways. If Obama wants to carry on that legacy, he's probably going to need to win a second term, but I don't think he'll ever quite achieve it, because I think Kennedy represents quite a unique case in some ways. He came of age at a time when the mass media was only just beginning to dominate American politics. And, I mean, obviously it's overwhelmingly important now, and it completely saturated all of our experience. So he was able to manage and control his image in a way that I don't think any politician would be able to now. He just didn't have to contend with the same level of intrusion. And certainly, you know, if he'd been president, well, in the internet era, there's no way that all of the revelations that only emerged after his death would have been kept quiet for that long. So, you know, he kind of benefited from the birth of, you know, hyper-mediatized politics, but he didn't have to contend with the complete overwhelming nature of it now. And also, I don't think you can ever really underestimate the importance of dying young. You only have to look at figures like James Dean, Marilyn Monroe. They all died young, and their images have been imprisoned in many ways by their deaths. So they're always going to, you know, seem young to us, even though they've been dead for many, many years. And also, because he was killed, a kind of neat narrative was spun around his administration because of what followed. So before he died, America was great and stable and prosperous. And after he died, the Vietnam War escalated, Watergate happened, Reagan was involved in Iran-Contra, Clinton had Lewinsky. It all kind of just got out of control. So that it seemed to suggest that with Kennedy's death died kind of the nation's innocence in some ways. So whether that's actually true or not, I mean, Kennedy was, you know, has to be at least partially responsible for the crises that followed his death. I mean, he got involved in Vietnam initially. He escalated the Cold War, all of that kind of thing. It's a kind of neat narrative that's been told about him. And it's actually a testament to the success of the Camelot myth that it's still remembered in that way. So I don't think Obama will be remembered in the same terms. I mean, certainly he will, you know, he's going to go down in history as the first black president, which is a hugely significant and remarkable achievement. But American politics is just much more divisive now. It's, you know, Obama was given 18 months before the Republicans regrouped and attacked his very, very, you know, admirable attempts at reforming, you know, healthcare and things like that. And I think also people are just much more disenchanted with politics now. It doesn't seem to be improving anytime soon. My research has suggested that the ideals and myths that Kennedy represents are probably more likely now to be enacted in fiction in a lot of ways. So American cinema and TV has become sort of expert at producing fictional presidencies that are more compelling than the real thing. So in a lot of ways, we don't look to the real person to recreate the greatness of Kennedy in a lot of ways. I mean, Obama had that during the election campaign, but he hasn't quite managed it. So we keep turning to the fictional, which I think is quite interesting. You only have to look at, I mean, the comparisons between Jed Bartlett from The West Wing and Obama were made quite frequently. And certainly, and also the candidate who follows Jed Bartlett in The West Wing, Matthew Santos, the kind of comparisons were made. I don't necessarily think that that is an accurate comparison, but at least shows that people desire that ideal in some way. And I think, although most people can acknowledge the fact that a fictional president will never have to deal with the levels of complexity that a real one does, I think there's still a yearning for this kind of straightforward or honest politician in the White House who does what he says and he kind of tells the truth and all that kind of thing. But these fictional presidents are obviously not hamstrung by, you know, keeping various interest groups happy, making constant compromises. So I think that, you know, while we might turn to fiction a lot, we know that it's not going to happen in reality, but we still kind of want to believe it in some way. But I think it's unsurprising, given the levels of challenge facing our politicians today, whether American presidents or British prime ministers, that we as a public are still all too happy to retreat into fiction. So where many of America's national myths have been seriously undermined by the economic crisis, and her leaders have been shown to be unable to revive this dream, I think fictional presidents still show there is a belief in the system, even if there isn't one in the people who run it. And I think for a brief period, Obama looked like he would be that man. And I think in some ways, the continued adoration of Kennedy is a demonstration of the level to which we kind of have believed the fiction of Kennedy.